Hello. So today I thought I would talk about the concept of death in Buddhism, and specifically an answer to the question, how is it that we can best prepare ourselves for the inevitability of death? Now, death is something that is obviously of incredible importance and holds a important place in philosophical discussion as human beings, because the reality of our life as human beings is that we have a finite time as a human being or in this life. And so this one fact comes to be a sort of defining point in our philosophical discussion, because with anything else, any talk about how one should live one's life or how one should behave is really irrelevant if it ignores the, or it's inadequate if it ignores this fact. If we talk about building up our life, building up our status, building up our power, building up our influence, building up our wealth in this life as something that has some ultimate significance and ultimate benefit, these kind of things are, or these ideas are ignoring the fact that we all have to die. And this is really a, obviously a poorly thought out sort of way of looking at the world, or way of living one's life, or way of approaching the idea, the concept of suffering and happiness, and the way to find true peace and well-being. So, our spiritual life and our whole philosophy and how we approach the world has to take into account this fact. And what we see is that when people are not able to adequately take this fact into account, that they are terribly unprepared for the moment of death. When they die, they can die in they many people do die in great suffering and great trauma and great fear and confusion and general unpreparedness. They're not prepared for this. They don't know how to react. They don't know what to make of it and how to behave. Whereas other people who have prepared themselves and who have developed a philosophy that has taken into account the inevitability of death, or that is in line with the concept of death, that doesn't rely on worldly gain and worldly pleasure and satisfaction, or things in this world that one is going to have to leave behind, then these people, when they die, they are seen to be quite peaceful when they die, because they have some idea and understanding, and they have no fear. Now, they might be wrong, of course. They might have a wrong understanding. They might believe that when you die, if you believe a certain thing, when you die, you'll go to heaven. If you don't believe a certain thing, you'll go to hell. And they might be wrong about that. So when they die, they might be in for a real shock. But on the one hand, you could say that they're quite prepared for death. They're prepared in their own way. They have their own understanding of what happens when you die, and they prepare themselves accordingly. So they're not afraid. It may happen that after they die, they are disappointed or even shocked and disturbed and find themselves that they actually weren't prepared for the consequences of their actions. For instance, people who have done terrible things in their lives and have this certain belief that they weren't these things weren't bad deeds, and that they were going to heaven as a result of some other belief. They might find out, as we understand the to be the case, due to the existence of karma, they might find out that when they die, that they're going to a bad place, or they have a bad future, unpleasant future in store because of their unpleasantness. So in this sense, not only do we have to take into account the fact of death, but we also have to understand it properly. We can't just follow after some belief and say, I believe this, and therefore I'm prepared for death, or go according to that belief, and therefore somehow say we're ready for death, because it might turn out that our belief is false. One very, very prevalent belief, and I say it's a belief, in modern times, is that there's nothing after death. That when you die, that's it. And so many people in the world feel quite prepared for death, believing that there's nothing after. It's somehow believing in the ultimate reality of death, or the quality of death as being a ultimate reality, that at the moment of the death of this human being, that's it. And so based on this, they simply prepare themselves in their minds to let go, to give up, and to not come back, to have nothing when they die. And so when they die, they can die quite peacefully. Now, I say this is a belief, and I think it's the one belief that that is most denied as being based on faith or based on belief. And I think that's quite unfortunate because it leaves many people terribly unprepared for death. The result of belief in a materialistic reality, the idea that all we have is this physical reality or the physical body, the made up of the various parts and cells and organs and so on, and that when this breaks apart, that's it for us, that there's no more, basically that there's no more mind, that the mind is an epiphenomenon, it's created by the physical. This belief leads to quite a bit of freedom, and freedom from ethics, really, because even though people will claim that there is some kind of ethical nature or framework that can be drawn from a materialistic point of view, in the end, the average ordinary person doesn't really see a great need to keep moral ethics. They might feel the need that, in order to be happy in this life, you have to keep a basic frame of ethics. But there are no real consequences of bad deeds. You know, if you kill people, if you do harmful things, if you are an evil, nasty person, then yes, it might cause you suffering. But on the other hand, it might not. On the other hand, you might be able to suppress it and enjoy the pleasures of life, and really put off the whole idea of the bad things that you've done. Put off thinking about it. It can be done. I mean, evil people who do evil things can remove these things from their mind or suppress them to such an extent that they're not thinking about them. It's basically putting it off, right? And if you can put it off long enough, maybe if you're not a terrible person, but if you've done some bad things and you just push them aside and indulge in pleasure and alcohol and drugs and all of the many sensual pleasures in the world, that you can somehow, when you die, be free from the results of those actions. Now, were it the case that there were nothing after death, then this would be fine and really an adequate frame of reference, of understanding. But it's not. And in fact, as I'll explain, and I'll try to give a little bit of explanation about why my understanding is otherwise. But the reality is that the bad deeds that we do, the bad things and the good things that we do, the things that we do that are harmful towards others, that are based on greed, based on anger, based on delusion, jealousy, conceit, and so on, based on unwholesome, unethical principles, or ethical, wholesome principles, have an effect on our minds. And we can suppress the effect that they have through through concentrated effort, either through meditation or through indulgence in sensual pleasures, through things like television or computer, things that focus the mind, that keep the mind from realizing the effects of the bad deeds or of the good deeds, specifically the bad deeds here. But eventually it's going to catch up with us. And the fact that there is an afterlife, the fact that there is something past this point that we call death, means that this fact of life, that really I think everyone with a little bit of introspection can agree upon. You don't have to be a advanced meditator to understand this. If you have a basic understanding of how the mind works, or if you do a little bit of introspection, you can see how these things affect the mind. And given that there is an afterlife, if there weren't, and I'm simply arguing the point that there is, but if there weren't, then you could say it's not that big of a deal. You know, it might make some unpleasantness to feel guilty about the bad things that I've done, but I don't really have to feel guilty about it, because when I die, that's it. It's not my deeds. They're just something that has been done and something that's gone. But given that there is an afterlife, this fact of life is going to come back to haunt us, and you can only pile up and suppress so much until it explodes and comes back to haunt you. Now, why I say this idea of the nothingness after life is only a belief, and why really there is clearly some reality after the point of death, is because what we call death is really only a concept. And so what I want to talk about now is how the best way to prepare oneself for death is by understanding it, by understanding what one means by death. And in Buddhism, this is really true of everything. The best way to prepare for any suffering, the best way to be ready, or the best way to deal with any problem, is to understand it. Understanding is the greatest cure for suffering, the greatest tool that we have, the greatest weapon we have against all kinds of suffering that might exist. So once we understand death, then we can see that there's really nothing to fear from it. And this is true with everything. Once we understand all of the things that cause us suffering, even once we understand our addictions, once we understand our attachments, our obsessions, our worries, our fears, our anger, our frustration, our hatreds, and so on, once we understand them, they'll have no power over us. And we'll see that we'll be able to break them apart. We'll see that something that was very much a problem or an entity is actually made up of random or conglomerated mind states that are jumbled up, mixed up and tangled up. It comes from a mind that is not straight, that is not a direct understanding of reality simply for what it is. So what do we mean when we talk about understanding death? Well, in the Buddha's teaching, there are three kinds of death. Death can be understood in three ways, or there are three things that we have to understand about death, three ways of understanding death that have to be understood. The first one is understanding death conceptually, and this doesn't yet explain the afterlife. This is simply talking about the fact of death. It doesn't explain how the linking occurs, because this is simply a theory that could be true or could be false, that there is death and that death comes again and again and again. So the first important thing to understand is that death occurs. And to understand the importance and the significance of this. Because, as I said, this is what allows us to prepare for death. It's even more important than understanding how to prepare for death is just getting this across to ourselves that we should be prepared for death, that we should remember death. We shouldn't forget about it. We shouldn't live like there is no tomorrow. We shouldn't live our lives thinking that there's going to be no end to this. We should live our lives in a way so that, at the very least, we have conclusion, we have closure in this life, so that we don't die regretting something, feeling that we've left something undone. And this can often occur when we're unprepared, when we are being distracted by the many pleasures of the sense and by many useless pursuits, that we're failing to develop good deeds or good traits, good qualities in ourselves. We're failing to develop relationships and our appreciation of others and so on. And we find that when we die, we feel like we're leaving things undone, and that we still have this need left over, that there is something left to do, something that we have to accomplish. And so simply reminding ourselves that we're going to die and thinking about it and considering it is a great way to prepare oneself. Another aspect of this is the fact that we don't know how we're going to die. Not only do we not know when we're going to die, but we don't know how we're going to die. So the when, the not knowing when is quite a scary thing, because if you die tomorrow, are you ready for it? This is the question. If you die tomorrow, are there things you've left undone? Are you going to regret something? And so rather than living like you're not going to die, you should live as though you're going to die tomorrow, or you're going to die this afternoon, or so on. You know, if you only had one more day left to live, what would you do to prepare yourself, or what would you want to accomplish so that you wouldn't have any regrets? But the other important point is that we don't know how we're going to die, and we might die in terrible circumstances. And we know this because we have evidence. We have other people who have died in terrible situations, screaming and crying. And most of us, the only thing we do to prepare ourselves for this is to wish and hope and pray that it doesn't happen to us, and to try our best to avoid this sort of situation, which of course is only a gamble, really. And we might very well be one of those people who has to die in a horrific or unpleasant, even terrible way. And so we can ask ourselves, are we prepared for that? Or are we prepared for any sort of death? Because we don't know what it's going to be like. It might be peaceful, but it might not. Considering how many different ways there are that people leave this world, and the varying degrees of suffering that people have when they die, this is something that, like anything really, like any calamity that might come over us, you know, you can ask yourself, what would you do if you got cancer? What would you do if you lost a limb? What would you do if you lost a loved one? What would you do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if this or that happened to you? These sort of thought experiments can be quite useful. Exploring the possibilities and somehow testing yourself to be sure that you're going to be ready, because any of these things could come to us. It's kind of like preparing yourself for battle, is in the way that soldiers prepare themselves. The reason they do is, and they train themselves in so many different ways, is because they have to be ready for every eventuality. They have to be able to respond correctly to every situation. And this is really a good analogy for us to keep in mind in our lives, because you know, life isn't unpleasant in the sense of having to fight all the time, but it's dangerous in the sense that if you're not ready, you can fall into great suffering at any time, depending on the circumstances that come to you. You know, people, even when minor difficulty comes, when they lose their job, when they lose their house, when they get in a car accident, or so on, it can be quite traumatic for them, quite difficult. People commit suicide or start taking drugs or so on based on this change. And so we should understand death at the very least to be a great change. It's something that that has a great impact on our lives. And we have this testimonial from people who have had near-death experiences, that all of your life flashes before your eyes. Now this will get into, I'll talk about this a little more in this when I talk about the second way of understanding death. But just to be clear, that death is going to be a very profound thing. It has a profound impact on our lives, even if there's nothing after we die. If we don't have this sense of closure, if we're not at peace with our whole life, these things that come up during the time before we die are going to bring great suffering and trauma to us. So these people who have been able to suppress all of the memories and thoughts of bad deeds that they've done are in for a big shock when they die most of the time, that it's going to come back and haunt them. And because when you die, it's a giving up. You lose your strength, you lose your mental fortitude, so your ability to push these things aside slowly fades away, and these things come up in full force. So as Buddhists, we often think about death in this way. We'll think about our own mortality, and we'll remind ourselves just to, as a test for ourselves, just to check whether are we living our lives in a way that's leading us to be more and more prepared for the future, for the eventuality, and for especially the eventual inevitability of death, as being a very important part of our lives, being the end of it. So this is the first way that we understand death, is that there is this concept. Now, the reason why this understanding of death is simply conceptual, this is a most important point to realize, is that even though we call this death, what we're actually talking about is a conceptually agreed upon notion that there is something that dies. Because of course, from the point of view of biology, something has died. But from the point of view of physics, which of course deals with ultimate reality, nothing dies, right? There is no loss of energy. The energy is simply transferred. It is not created or destroyed. That the systems that existed before have simply broken apart. But the atoms, the physical reality, has not disappeared. And so, whereas many scientists have this belief that the mind is merely an epiphenomenon, in fact, I was told by someone that the mind is simply, or could simply be, akin to the vibrations of a string. When a violin string is brushed, then there's a vibration occurs, and so the sound arises. And they say the mind is simply like that. Without the violin, without the string, without the bow, there is no sound. So they will say that when the body breaks apart, yes, the physical doesn't disappear, but the systems that got together to allow for what we call life are gone. And this we can see as a third person, or as a second person. We can see in other people. When we look at someone else who is dying, we can see what they're going through. When they die, we can see that something has changed, that the mind is pretty clearly not engaged with the physical, that the physical is no longer being controlled or being interacted with by any mental reality. Now, for all we know, it could be. There could be a mind there that's watching the decomposure of the body and so on. But the understanding of scientists is that doesn't make sense, that the mind is created through the conglomeration of the physical and therefore disappears or breaks down or stops at the moment of death. Now, the problem with this, of course, is that our understanding of the physical has changed a lot in the past 100 years. in the past 100 years, our understanding has shifted from a three-dimensional universe to a universe that is based on experience, or is based on sequences of events, as opposed to being based on objects, atoms, things that are out there. Instead of this idea that there is a reality out there, when we look at another person, we say there is the person. We can only talk about the reality of the physical realm in terms of the experience, in terms of the looking and the checking and the examining. And when we phrase it in that way, when we talk about looking at a person, then we can start to talk about what is going on in that instance. But it comes from the mind. It comes from that experience. This is talking about quantum physics, because in terms of quantum physics, there is every reality has to be framed in terms of an experiment that is made, in terms of the decision to perform some experiment, or the decision to do something, or to engage in some activity, and based on talking about that engagement, then we can come to an understanding of the physical realm. We can talk about the quantum field and the probabilities and so on of this or that being the case. And so the truth is that any kind of quote-unquote objective observation of other people dying is really not objective at all, that what we're talking about is something that doesn't really exist. When we talk about that person who died, since we're talking about something being out there, that we're simply talking about our experience, how we experience something, this person, and then we interpret it as being a person who died. The point being that we don't know what happened with them. We don't know what their experience is. And in fact, we don't know what it is that we're seeing. We don't know what is really happening in our engagement with the world. All we know is that we're having an engagement and an interaction with the world. And this is a very Buddhist way of understanding reality. So this is why we understand death to be simply a concept, that we have this idea that that person died. Because you can't say to yourself, oh, look, I'm dead. Right? You can't experience your own death in that way until you die. Right? You can't say, I'm going to go to the hospital and see myself die. What we do is we say, I'm going to go to the hospital, watch, there's that person dying, or the doctors see this person dying, or that person dying. They're talking about a physical reality outside of their own experience. They're talking about a physical universe that is not their own. They're talking about a quantum interaction outside of their own interactions. So it's simply a conjecture, it's a belief. And until we actually die, we can't say what this death is like. And so this is the explanation of why we say this person died, that person died, is simply a concept. Now, the truth, the other reason of why it's simply a concept is because there is this second understanding that we have to have of death. So this first understanding, most important, is reminding ourselves that this is coming. But now more important than that is that we take it to the second level, this next level, and understand it in terms of ultimate reality, of what's really going on, what's really happening, the experience of death. Because apart from that, all we have is other people dying. So what happens when we die? When we look at another person, we say, the physical ceased, the body stopped working, and we make a conjecture that person has passed away. But we don't really know what happened, because in reality, that body, that universe that we say is out there, when we look and we see a person dying, we don't know what is going on. We don't know what is the underlying reality based on that observation. So this is where material science fails, and as a Buddhist, this is my understanding, and this is the argument I have with material science, is that their objectivity fails because it's dealing with a universe that is out there, which doesn't exist, which has no ultimate reality. It's not based on the laws of quantum physics and the understanding that we have gained in the past 100 years. It doesn't take these into account. So it also doesn't take into account our experience. And what I mean by experience is as a Buddhist or from a Buddhist point of view, because Buddhism points out the fact that all of our science, all of our objectivity, everything has to come from our own experience. All of reality, and this is what quantum physics is able to point out, all of reality is based on our experience, or it's based on interaction between the experimenter or the observer and the observed. And this is where we understand death in terms of ultimate reality, because as my teacher always said, that ultimate death in an ultimate sense occurs at every moment. And this is really what the Buddha taught, is that we die at every moment, that our death occurs at every moment, because our experience arises and ceases, and that the truth of reality is that all we have is experience, and every experience is born and dies. It comes and goes. And this is how we understand the world around us. This is how we live our lives. So even people who don't believe in afterlife or think of death as being a real ultimate reality have to build this dichotomy that we're talking about death and after death when there's nothing, and then life, which doesn't, you know, which has no death, or it has no stopping, it has no changing. All it has is the arising and ceasing of experience. There is no change in this. Even when we're asleep, there is still this basic experience of dreams and very dull consciousness that actually experience of reality continues on and on and on and has no cessation. It is something that that really defines who we are. And then there is the law of cause and effect, how we change based on our experience. One experience leads to another, and experiences will change who we are, and will it change the later experiences that we have? It will change this matrix of experience from one set of experiences shifting to another set of experiences. If we do bad deeds, if we're engaged in unwholesomeness, the experiences will slowly shift in a bad way. And if we engage in good things and wholesome things, then our experiences will slowly shift in a good way. But ultimately, we're simply dealing with experience. And this is the reality we understand. If we examine our lives, our experience, if we examine life, what it means to live, what it means to be, because this is really what we're talking about. You can examine the physical before it's died and after it's died, and you find that it's the same, that the systems have broken apart, but the ultimate components are the same, that they have simply changed, they've broken apart, their relationship has changed. But what a materialist scientist says is that what changes is that the mind disappears. You know, the mind is gone, consciousness has ended. So when we start to look at what it means, what does this consciousness mean that we're talking about? Consciousness ends when we die. What does this mean? We come to see that our conscious, what we mean by consciousness, is this succession of experiences where we experience the reality around us, and where we do good and bad things, where we engage in wholesome and unwholesome activity, causing stress for ourselves or causing peace and happiness and bringing harmony to our lives and to our universe. So then the question then is, how does this stop, or what happens to cause this to cease at the moment of death? And as we start to unravel our lives and who we are and our experience, we come to see that, we come to see first that the external reality is not real in an ultimate sense. And so we come to see that actually death has no ultimate reality, because there is no requirement for the physical. The physical isn't required for the mental to exist. The mental, in fact, creates the physical, or our experience. In fact, you could say the physical and the mental create our being, create who we are, create this human state. They are what has given rise to this life. They're what has caused us to be born as human beings, and they're what is going to cause us to cling and create in the future. An interesting clue to this, you know, even without practicing meditation, without the kind of intensive introspection that is required to understand this, the clue that we have is what, that when you look at matter, when you look at all of what we say is material, this world of plants and animals and minerals and all these entities, the matter is simply made up of energy. That energy and matter are one. And what matter is simply a conglomeration, a condensation, and an intense combining together and compacting of energy into atoms, into very small spaces. And this intensity of energy can be seen with things like the atom bomb or nuclear energy, which releases this incredible amount of energy. And in fact, we see that this is the case of who we are, that all of our entities, even our entity as a human being, is simply a condensation or a compression of the mind, the lucid state, the bright and radiant state of mind, which is unattached. When we start to look at our attachments, our desires, our aversions, and so on, we can see that these are knots, these are attachments that have reduced our mind to a very coarse state and have given rise to the experiences that we have. This formed state of a human being is actually simply a series of knots and tangles and intense compression of reality, which is both physical and mental, but is even the physical is simply the energy, is the actions that we do, the karma that we have done, that has tangled and twisted and knotted and compressed and perverted, really, reality, the ultimate reality, into these physical states, where we have eyes and ears and nose and tongue and body and all of the chemicals and all of the liquids and all of the solids and all of the things that make up who we are, that in its contrived and formed state. And so there's no reason to believe in death at all. There's no reason to believe that death is anything but an end to this. This thing that we have created, just like when you build a house, when the house falls down, that's the end of the house. Now, the reason why it's still very important to prepare for this, and why death is still very important, is because of this clinging that we have. We have created this human state out of an intense amount of clinging. Most people don't understand this, and this is something that takes intensive introspection. It takes meditation to really see the intensity of our attachment. You know, we talk about being attached to external things. We talk about being attached to belongings, even being attached to people as being intense states of attachment. But really, until you look at your attachment to who you are, to self, to being, to the I, this entity that we've created as a human being, you don't really understand what it means to be attached. So this incredible attachment that we have has created this human being. When you die, the craving doesn't die. The attachment certainly doesn't die. It's not for most people. for most people, it's we still have this idea of the I, of the self, and we feel this reality that we're so comfortable with slipping away, and this is what causes people great fear and confusion when they die. Once it starts to slip away, we don't know what to cling. You know, we're like people falling. You know, you fall from a height. You immediately cling to something, right? In the same way that you would cling to the self. And so people often wonder, you know, what is it? What is this force that would give rise to another life? You know, how can it that be that suddenly, poof, you're born again? Well, it's this very intense craving that we still have. When you die, the house falls apart, and you create a new one. You immediately like, oh my God, it's worse than losing your house. It's losing the whole of your being, the whole of who you are. There's nothing you can cling to at that moment. And so you create. What we cling to generally is our thoughts, our memories. We cling to those aspects of our being that are most desirable or most pleasant, most dear to us. And this is how our karma, our past deeds, create our future. When you pass away, all you have is you know the things you're going to miss, the things you want, the things that you cling to. It can also be the bad deeds that you've done, the fear that you have, the guilt that you have that you've been suppressing, that you've been pushing down, and those suddenly those things you know become the impetus for your future. They become because there's a bondage, there's an attachment, not only to the things that we hold dear, but also to the things that we're afraid of, that we hate, and the bad deeds that we've done, the problems that we've caused for others. Even though we don't cling to those things, we have this negative, this repulsion, which is equally as just as much of an attachment, and it's a force. It's an energy that exists, and it's something that has to be mitigated, or has to be brought into the equation. You could say, in one sense, when we die, there are all these energies floating around, the energies in them of good deeds and bad deeds. You know, the attachments that we have, which are very real, and which can be seen with any basic introspection. Which is why meditators are very much prepared for death. Because we see that these attachments that we have, our good and bad intentions, are a cause for all of our suffering, and have a real energy to them. That there really is a power to these things. This isn't just a theory. When you sit down and meditate, You'll all of the good and bad things that you've done will come up. You'll feel good about the good things, you'll feel bad about the bad things. There's no suppressing. Suddenly you're confronted with who you are. And who you are is what you've done, is the good and bad deeds that you've performed. And so this is what we mean by talking about death in terms of the ultimate reality, what's really going on. And this requires meditation. The practice of meditation is what allows you to see through the concept of death, to bring it onto a larger scale, and to understand, to put it in its right framework, and to understand the place that death has. That actually it's the end of this intensive game that we've played, or structure that we've created. It's the collapsing of these energies. You know, the energy that it was required to create is now falling apart, and then there's more energy, and there's more creation. The human state itself is not an ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is our experiences, and this can be verified very easily if you're able to put aside all of your beliefs, all of your scientific explanations. If you simply look inside, objectively, avoiding any interpretation, saying this is this, that is that, you know, in terms of this being God or that being heaven or assigning any meaning to anything. Simply looking at it for what it is, as the Buddha did, and recording it and analyzing it objectively, not putting any meaning on it, but you know, adding it up and drawing your conclusions objectively. You can see this. You can see the power of our emotions, the power of our negative states, the power of our positive states, the power of a clear mind, the power of an unclear mind. And you can see the changing. You can see the changes that occur in beings that perform good deeds and bad deeds, or in ourselves when we perform good and bad deeds, and how it affects us. You can see the things that have great power, the things that have little power. You can see exactly for yourself, and there's no need to believe in any theory whatsoever. So, and this leads to the final understanding that we have about death, which is our understanding about what really has to die and what we really have to cultivate and give birth to. That when we talk about death in Buddhism, the most important death is the death of our evil states and the death of our ignorance. The death of the negative things, because what really dies is our goodness and our evil, the evil inside, the good and the evil that we have inside. If our goodness dies, this is a great tragedy and a great loss for us. But if our evil dies, if the bad things in us die, this is really what has the most importance. This. When we talk about death as a human being, when we talk about death at every moment, when we talk about the process of life and the process of experience, that it really only has any significance for as long as we have some kind of attachment. If we have no attachment, there is no need to prepare for anything, or there is no need to worry or to concern ourselves for the future. There's no need to think, what if this happened, what if that happened? There is no concern. There's no need to concern over anything that might happen in the future. The ultimate preparation is the removal from the mind of any attachment. When we're attached to a certain thing, then our happiness depends on that one thing. When that one thing disappears or is even endangered, then there arises great suffering for us. It creates stress and unpleasantness in our minds. If there's nothing that we cling to, if our happiness is not dependent on a certain experience, a certain reality, if we can be happy in any experience, any circumstance, if we are able to remove the misunderstandings from our mind, if we're able to analyze, comprehend, and understand reality for what it is, and be able to understand every experience simply for what it is. When we die, to know that we're dying, to understand this as dying, and to not have anything else happen in our mind, have to have all these energies worked out where there is no sparks, there is no energy being created or released in terms of attachment or aversion or so on. There is simply a process occurring and a static array of energy where we're not clinging to anything, where we're not upset or stressed in any way. Then death doesn't hurt us, loss doesn't hurt us, change doesn't hurt us. None of these things affect us. So the ultimate preparation and the ultimate goal, the ultimate benefit, the ultimate tool that we have, or state, whereby we have nothing to fear from death, or by extension any future state, is this freedom from suffering, freedom from evil, freedom from unwholesomeness, freedom from any kind of attachment, any kind of clinging, or need, or hope, or desire, freedom from holding anything dear or undear, the ability to experience all of reality simply for what it is, and to be ready for it. So we can prepare ourselves. We can, as I said, we can think about death and test ourselves and see what it would be like when we die. But all that's good for is to help us to see our defilements, to help us to see this clinging that we have. Oh yes, if I die, I would cling to this and this and this, or I would be afraid of this and this. If I suffer in this way, if I get hurt or so on, I would be in great suffering and distress in this and this and this way, because I still have clinging. So all that really says to us is that we need to do something. We need to prepare ourselves. This is useful because it helps us realize that we have to prepare ourselves. As I said, the preparation comes from experience, understanding reality in an ultimate sense, and understanding death in terms of the sequence of events that lead up to that moment and have led up to this moment, and create this cycle, which is really it's not an ultimate state, it's just something that we've fallen into, and that some beings fall into. They fall into the cycle of creating and destroying, or the falling apart, the loss. And this understanding of reality in terms of the sequence of events, in terms of sequences of experiences and their causal relationship, is what allows us to finally understand the true reality and to attain the ultimate death, which is the death of unwholesomeness. When all of our unwholesome states die, we can say that finally we've attained to a final death, the right death, because there is no more unwholesomeness and therefore no more suffering. There's nothing that could give rise to a future creation such as this. There's nothing that would give rise to all of the stresses that we've had to face in this life. Because really, otherwise, with the loss of all of the things that we cling to and all of who we are, when we come back, we're going to have to do it all over again. This isn't our first life. And once you accept the reality of a next life, then you have to assume that there's not much reason why it's going to be different from this life. And whereas you might say it may be nice to come back, or this life, you know, has good things about it, really what we mean is, after fighting for so many years, we have come to a state of moderate happiness for some time. Because in fact, this life is full of suffering. And considering what we mean by coming back, to be more of the same. You can ask yourself how many times you want to come back. You know, one time is maybe interesting, but 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times. And so we come to see that this kind of reality, this kind of creation, is really useless, pointless, and a cause for great stress and suffering. And so we become free from it, and there is no more clinging to anything, and no more need for anything. So there is no more suffering when things disappear or don't go our way or so on. So I think this is at least an overview of how we can at least begin to come to terms with this reality of death. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you're able to put some of this into practice, to start to look at your own death and start to look at your own defilements and our lack of preparedness for the future due to our attachments and our delusions and our ignorance about who we are and about the nature of reality, and that you're able to come to understand reality and to find true peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering for yourselves. Thank you for watching, and have a good day.